Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. First on the docket, Kenosha, Wisconsin, protests turn deadly. Second, a Letitia Stauch update. Third, Suzanne Morphew's brother calls BS on Barry Morphew, the husband. Fourth, corruption, pure and simple, is going to prison. Fifth, the Golden State Killer plays everyone, a death penalty case involving a Native American, and finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, and also leave us a comment below. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about today. First on the docket, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Protests turn deadly. Kenosha, Wisconsin is where a 29-year-old man by the name of Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back by police when he walked away from them and was grabbing into his car, opening the car door, reaching into his car. Fortunately, Mr. Blake is going to survive. Unfortunately, he is going to be paralyzed from the waist down. Needless to say, once this video went viral, people were not happy, particularly in Kenosha, Wisconsin. There have been rioting for the last 2 days. The governor has brought out the National Guard to basically kind of keep the peace. There's always that one guy that screws it up for everybody, right? Well, meet that guy. His name is Kyle Rittenhouse, and he was arrested in Illinois, and he is currently waiting extradition back to Wisconsin. He has been charged in Wisconsin with suspicion of first-degree intentional homicide because the other night, 2 people were killed and a 3rd was wounded in an attack apparently carried out by this young man who was caught on cell phone video opening fire in the middle of the street with a semi-automatic rifle, commonly referred to as an AR-15. Well, as you can see from this video, and for those of you who can't see because you're listening to the podcast, you will see that there is a crowd of protests. And apparently, Mr. Rittenhouse had come out to help protect the property owners. Mr. Rittenhouse was actually interviewed by the website The Daily Caller, who was there covering the protests and riots, unbeknownst to anybody that he was going to shoot someone later. And he stated when asked why he was standing with a gun outside of a boarded up business, he stated, quote, "So people are getting injured and our job is to protect this business," this young man apparently told the Daily Caller. "And part of his job is to help people. If there is somebody hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I have my rifle, because I can protect myself, obviously, but I also have a med kit," end quote. First of all, this young man is 17 years old. Most jurisdictions, you have to be 18 to possess a rifle unless it's hunting purposes. Apparently, he has his rifle. Apparently, his web page or his Facebook page show that he thinks he wants to be a police officer in the future. I think all of those hopes are now gone. As you can see from the video, there's a protest going on. Apparently, this young man is running down the street and apparently had fired his firearm at a group of people or near a car. 3 individuals were actually chasing down Mr. Rittenhouse, and he falls. And at that point, these people try to attempt to subdue him, assuming for the police. And it looks like the rifle is being jerked around, or they were trying to get it away from him. But Mr. Rittenhouse shoots multiple rounds, striking all 3, killing 2. Then he gets up, walks away, and as he is heading down the street and there are police armored vehicles coming his way, he has his hands up with his rifle hanging around his neck with a strap that he has there. You can even hear him state, "I've killed somebody," and the police basically usher him along, telling him to go about his business. Obviously, he was arrested later in Illinois, but the police apparently didn't have a good idea of what was taking place or the circumstances and had no indication at that point that he had actually committed any crime. You can hear people on the video saying that guy just shot someone, but there's no indication that the police actually heard what those people were saying. Once again, our job is here to report, provide legal analysis of this. We're going to put the videos that we have up so that you can see them and see for yourself. Now, the individuals that have been shot, I'm sure that Mr. Rittenhouse will claim that he was defending himself. He didn't know what these people were going to do to him and whether they were going to be harmed. Then it's a jury question of whether his conduct was in fact reasonable and reasonable use of force that authorized deadly force. We will have to see. I'm sure there's more information to come. A lot of people are stating that he is a member of some sort of a militia, but there's no hard evidence of that whatsoever. Now, also understand that in Wisconsin, you have open carry, so you can walk around with your rifle without any sort of a permit or licensing of any kind, and that is not unlawful, like that is in many, many states, particularly in the Midwest and out West. So it didn't like he was doing anything wrong until he started firing on people, which is obviously a no-no. Take a look at the video. Let me know. Next on the docket, Letitia Stauch, ladies and gentlemen. Remember her? She's the Colorado Springs stepmother who was being accused of killing her stepson, Gannon Stauch, who went missing and was ultimately found deceased in Florida on the side of a road under a bridge. Some road crews found his body off the side of the road in Florida. Letitia Stauch made a bunch of terrible statements to the police, and she was ultimately charged based upon her statements and physical evidence found in the home, particularly blood in Gannon's room. Just prior to a competency proceeding taking place, Ms. Letitia Stauch was also charged with conspiracy to escape as she was plotting her escape from the El Paso County Detention Center in Colorado Springs. The defense raised competency, right? Does she appreciate and understand what's taking place, the seriousness of the events? Did she have some sort of mental disorder or defect that prevents her from participating in the proceedings? Well, the district attorney was very active when it came to issuing subpoenas. He was issuing subpoenas to the school district where Letitia Stauch worked. The district attorney was issuing subpoenas literally to anyone that may have some information as it relates to Letitia Stauch. The problem that the district attorney ran into is that the defense filed a motion to quash, that's right, Q-U-A-S-H, the subpoena. Now, as an officer of the court, you can't go on a fishing expedition with a subpoena. You have to know that the document is there. You can't just say, hey, give me your file. I'm not sure what we're looking for, but I'll know it when I see it. Right? So that's exactly what the prosecutor did, saying that he wanted all these records so that they could be released to the mental health professionals to be used in the competency evaluation, basically trying to show no one ever had any concerns that she had any mental health issues. Well, like I stated, the district attorney filed these motions, the defense filed the motions to quash, and guess what? The court granted the motion to quash and said that the prosecution cannot go fishing for these mental health records other than for what's been provided to the mental health providers. The court stated that the prosecution would only be allowing discovery of mental health records if there were previous competency evaluations, which, according to the defense, there were none. So records regarding prior mental health treatment could be relevant determining competency, but none of the people's subpoena contain such specific limitations. So the court said denied, quashed. You can't use subpoenas as a tool of investigation. It's only to be able to retrieve the documents that you know exist. And just like a warrant, a subpoena cannot be overly broad to do that. The court said, no, government, you can't do it. And all of the subpoenas to the Academy School District, subpoenas to the Fort Carson Medical Center, as well as subpoenas to the Horry County School seeking similar information, has been quashed. Nice try, District Attorney, but go back and be a little more specific. And as for Miss Letitia Stauch, she still remains down at the Colorado Mental Health Institute being evaluated for competency. Before we continue with the docket, a quick recess. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for your background subscription service. You need to know the people that you are going to be dealing with in life. When you sign up, you can do unlimited background searches, and it is done completely anonymously. And when you type in that name, a report is literally generated while you wait after a search of millions and millions of records here in the United States, and you receive information related to social media accounts, emails, phone numbers that they're associated with. You will get a criminal history, including sex offender registration, property records, marital records, ladies and gentlemen. In today's world, we have more people contact us that have said, I have had relationships started, and then I come to find out, based upon this search, that the person is still married. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're getting involved with somebody, you can't go without a background subscription service. Go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Suzanne Morphew. That's right. That's the missing Colorado woman who was last seen on Mother's Day of this year. Her husband has been somewhat less than cooperative, according to the Chaffee County Sheriff's Department, who have said that Mr. Morphew has refused to participate in a polygraph examination. But Mr. Barry Morphew states that, hey, I've done three multi-hour interviews. I'm not sure what else you could do. And if you guys hadn't screwed up this investigation, my beloved wife would be home already. Well, guess who's calling BS on Barry Morphew's story? That's right, Suzanne's brother, Andy Mormon. He is saying that he is coming to Colorado, or is in Colorado, and is going to conduct a search for his sister. And he's going to continue to do that, and he'll return until he finds the answers. He states that Suzanne has two daughters right now, and they have a right to know what's going on. He states that his father is 87 and has cancer and needs answers as related to his daughter. He says he's not giving up in any way. It has been widely reported that obviously Suzanne Morphew went on a bike ride and didn't come back. They, being the police, believed that they had actually found her bike. Barry Morphew says, whoa, she could have encountered a wild animal or something along those lines. Well, Mr. Mormon says, no, Barry, find that hard to believe at all, and that I don't think she fell off the hill on the bicycle or rode down the edge. He believes that a human being threw her down there. An animal didn't attack her because there was absolutely no blood evidence and no tracks on the ground, no scent from animals whatsoever. So needless to say, Suzanne Morphew's brother is not buying the theories floated by Barry Morphew, her husband. And Suzanne's brother wants Barry to take the polygraph test, but Mr. Morphew is not going to do that. Barry Morphew does not want to take the polygraph test. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a tool of interrogation. Mr. Barry Morphew is the target at this point. He obviously is a person of interest, and he is not going to cooperate. If he is speaking with an attorney, they are telling him not to cooperate, I'm sure, because they're making accusations about her. He should probably get out there looking for his wife, that's for sure, because otherwise it looks a little suspicious. Let me know. What do you think about the theories floated by Barry Morphew? Are you calling BS as well? Take a look at this, gentlemen. That's right. That's right. Take a look at him. This is Sheldon Silver, the former New York Assembly Speaker of the House. That's right. At one point, he was the most powerful politician in the state of New York, and now he is off to prison. He is 76, and the judge didn't care. She stated that you are corruption, pure and simple, and you have to go to prison. His report date was today, and he is going to start his 6.5-year sentence. Needless to say, his attorneys tried at multiple junctures to have him serve a sentence on in-home detention or house arrest, and the judge rejected that idea. Now, Mr. Silver went to trial multiple times, but the cases were reversed by appellate courts, but the third time, not so much. Mr. Silver is a clear example of what's wrong with career political politicians. Mr. Silver actually said, basically, the power was just too intense for me to resist. And, you know, that's why he needed all those kickbacks to support his lavish lifestyle. So we will see if Mr. Silver makes it out. We'll just have to wait and see. Obviously, he's very concerned about COVID. And don't forget, it is costing the taxpayers of the United States roughly $38,000 a year to house an inmate in prison. We only have one thing to say to Mr. Silver. We hope you enjoy your stay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if everything that we've talked about today doesn't get your blood boiling, this certainly will. That's right. Do you remember the Golden State Killer? Remember how he went through all this long sentencing for the last couple of days, sitting there behind a mask, in a wheelchair, in his jailhouse garb, the nice little orange jumpsuit, trying to appear as though he was completely frail and deserving of some sort of sympathy in some way, even though he had been convicted of obviously committing many, many rapes, murders, and kidnappings. Well, that little plan that he had to make him appear to be frail, to be old and incapable of really taking care of himself and probably near death, didn't get him a whole lot of sympathy. But take a look at these videos that were released of Mr. D'Angelo, the Golden State Killer, Joseph D'Angelo, moving around his cell, exercising, actually climbing up on the furniture to put things at a higher position. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. And yet he was allowed to go to court in a wheelchair. Now, I don't know if his attorneys did this or if this was Mr. D'Angelo's idea. I have no idea. But unless something has changed from the time that these videos were taken back in July, Mr. D'Angelo was simply trying to fool and scam everybody yet again. Next on the docket, a death penalty case involving the only Native American Indian is getting ready to proceed. That's right. Lesmond Mitchell is fighting for a stay of execution or some sort of reprieve from President Donald Trump. He would like to have his sentence commuted to a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Now, Tuesday night, the Supreme Court denied Mr. Mitchell's motion to stop his execution. At the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., also denied the same request to halt Mitchell's execution until after his petition to the president for clemency had more time to be considered. Mitchell originally filed his clemency position at the end of July, asking the president to demonstrate respect for tribal sovereignty by commuting his death sentence to life in prison without the possibility of release. Mitchell argues that since the Department of Justice set his execution date on July 29th, his petition for clemency has not been given adequate time for consideration. Mitchell's execution is scheduled for 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. And by the time this video goes out, the execution may have already taken place. Mr. Mitchell was convicted of some very serious conduct, specifically convicted in connection with the 2001 murder of a 63-year-old Navajo woman, Alice Slim, and her 9-year-old granddaughter, Tiffany Lee, on the Navajo Reservation in the northeastern corner of Arizona. Now, prosecutors said that Mitchell and his co-defendants murdered Slim and Lee. Oh, and by the way, not to forget, dismembering both of their bodies and burying them so that they could steal Slim's pickup truck and use it in an armed robbery. Mitchell, who was 20 at the time of the crimes, was found guilty on multiple charges, including first-degree murder, felony murder, and carjacking, resulting in death. Now, the Navajo Nation tribal leaders, not exactly thrilled with Mr. Mitchell's conduct for sure, but they are asking for the court not to execute Mr. Mitchell because they believe that there was racial bias and legal loopholes that allowed the death penalty to go forward. Specifically, Mitchell's attorneys say that he would be the first Native American in modern history to be executed by the United States government for a crime committed against another Native American on tribal land. The reason why that would happen is that under the Major Crimes Act, Congress allowed tribal option, where tribal leaders can decide whether to opt in to the federal death penalty. Here, the Navajo Nation, along with many other tribes, had opted out of the Major Crimes Act. The loophole comes because the Major Crime Act applies only to serious crimes, including murder and manslaughter. But here, the federal prosecutors in Mitchell's case found a loophole, so to speak. They called so they could pursue the death penalty because of the carjacking resulting in death charge, which is not considered a serious crime and doesn't fall under the Major Crimes Act, and therefore the Navajo Nation had no say in whether the case should go forward as a death penalty case or not. Now, although several judges have voiced their concern about this dismissal of tribal sovereignty, despite denying appeals from Mr. Mitchell, the Court of Appeals wrote in separate opinions questioning the Justice Department's decision to seek the death penalty. But obviously, that decision does not lie with the court. It lies with the executive branch through its prosecutors. Now, if Mr. Mitchell's execution goes forward, it will be the fourth federal execution this summer after the Justice Department lifted its ban after a 17-year hiatus. Interesting legal question. You know, some would say, oh, that's very good lawyering by the prosecutors. Other would say that was sneaky. Let me know what you think. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Meet Mr. Russell Wood, obviously given the presumption of innocence, but that's right. He was charged and arrested for battery following a confrontation in a store in Largo near Tampa Bay. The 6'6", 200-pound Mr. Woods was booked in jail and was given a bond of $250. According to the police, Mr. Wood was asked by employees to leave the hardware store since he refused to wear a mask. Now, while being asked to vacate the business, Mr. Wood turned around and coughed directly in the face of an employee. But wait, there's more. Mr. Wood then took a small step backward and then slapped the victim with the backside of his hand, according to police reports. While he was being ushered out of the business, Mr. Wood struck a customer in the face as well. Mr. Wood, not being deterred by that conduct, also threatened to burn down the hardware store. Mr. Wood ultimately fled the scene, but was quickly apprehended by police. Mr. Woods made a full confession. Mr. Woods also has a lengthy rap sheet, and frankly, that hairdo should be charged as a crime as well. Mr. Woods, it's private property. If they want you to wear a mask, you wear a mask. You don't assault people. So that, Mr. Russell Wood, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day.